You know, it's been over 200 years since the gold was discovered here.
It was against the law at that time to be Indian.
Liable to destroy our own rivers and meadows. The same man that put us on reserves and ghettos. The same man that's on those dirty dollar bills that you praise. The same white collar ballers that be treating you like slaves.
Oh, great spirit, grandfather, grandmother. Thank you for this beautiful red day you've given us. And thank you for our lives.
Good evening, relatives, and welcome to Bay Native Circle here on KPFA and online at kpfa.org. This is Tony Gonzalez, your host this evening, August 11th, and tonight we'll be talking about the United Nations proclaiming August 9 as International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. And I've invited several guests on tonight's show that I had spoken on a webinar this past Monday, August 9, and individuals who have a lot of knowledge and expertise in the UN system and also addressing issues on the ground. So we'll start out with Dr. Cuellar on the flute, welcoming everyone, and then we'll have Lenny Foster talk to us about political prisoners worldwide, and Leonard Peltier. Also, Kenneth Deere of the Mohawk Nation, of his many decades of work within the UN system and what he sees the challenges ahead. Also, Laulani Teal and Liko Martin of the Kingdom of Hawaii, and they'll be representative of Oceania and many of the issues that they're confronting at home for their own sovereignty and freedom from colonialism. And let's go into that webinar that I hosted as AIM West Monday, August 9, for International Day of the World's Indigenous People.
All my relations, welcome to a day to acknowledge and celebrate and commemorate International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, so proclaimed by the United Nations as far back as 1994. However, this year, because of pandemic, we want to pay particular emphasis to this occasion. And there were many activities in the physical sense, but because of the COVID-19, this would be Zoomed worldwide. But still, the theme for this year, No One Left Behind, and a call for a new social contract. And I've invited people from different regions of the world to come and express their solidarity on this occasion with the intertribal community at large, and as an effort to bring in the wider community into the circle to become familiar with the issues and the concerns that we're faced with today, and also to express the vision, the challenges of the future, to include a special message to the youth. And so although we are going through a very critical period in the world community, we still want to, again, talk about the achievements that Indian peoples of the world have been making at the United Nations also, and since the presence of Chief Destaque in 1923 and to the present. So we have many issues and concerns, and I'd like to first mention that the general order of the agenda for this webinar, if I may, would include Dr. Jose Cuellar with a flute to the hemispheric peoples and to the broader community, and Lynn Foster, special advisor to Leonard Peltier, with a prayer. And he will also speak on behalf of political prisoners and about the case of Leonard Peltier. Then with still time permitting, we will have from North America, Kenneth Deere, who would share his thoughts on the theme for today's webinar. And thereafter, perhaps we will have Bill Means that would come on after Kenneth Deere. And after Bill Means, we would have Laulani Teo and Liko Martin of Hawaiian Islands speaking for Oceana and the issues and concerns they're faced with on the Kingdom of Hawaii at this moment. And also we'll have Buxu Iqualikinya of Panama, of the Kuna Nation, to express their visions, their concerns, the significance of the date, and the challenges for their youth as well in the world. So with that, hopefully, we were hoping to have Mary Samath of Kenya. Seems to be a misconnection problem there. And also having invited the Sami Nation of Scandinavian region, Finland, and the Norgren. But perhaps they may be able to come on at a later time. Now I'd like to reintroduce Lenny Foster, please, if you will, please.
Thank you. Tony asked me to say a few words here on behalf of our brothers incarcerated, going on almost 46 years at the United States Federal Bureau of Prisons. Leonard Peltier, he's 76 years old. We remember him in our prayers, and he has upcoming hearings that are coming up, and we pray and hope that that the United States government, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, will hear our prayers and be moved to open those doors so he can go home to Turtle Banna. Band of Chippewas Nation up in North Dakota. And, you know, he's a political prisoner, one of the foremost political prisoners, almost been incarcerated 46 years, long time. And as my brother said, one of the theme of this event is leave no one behind. And that's all of our relatives, brothers and sisters that are incarcerated in the city, county, state, federal prisons throughout this Western Hemisphere, not only in the United States, but other countries, Mexico, Central America, South America, New Zealand, Hawaii, the Pacific Islands, places that that no one thinks about, you know, many of our indigenous people, because they stand up for their civil rights, human rights, in many cases, their treaty rights. They're incarcerated. They become a threat to the government. And so we recognize and acknowledge that. In my prayer, I ask the Creator and the spirits to remember those individuals and open those doors up through this prayer as we utilize our Chinupa and the Inipi, the sweat lodge and the pipe. We pray, cleanse ourselves, purify ourselves, and we continue to be strong and to be committed to the struggle. So that prayer that I made, asking the spirits to help us, and that foremost political prisoner at this time, and there's many others. There's Leonard Peltier. I know that our Hawaiian natives, our brothers and sisters, are struggling for their land. Likewise, in South America, Central America, and other places where indigenous people are surviving. And I'd like to just add in closing here that the stand that the American Indian Movement made in Wounded Knee, South Dakota in 1973, brought forth support from the national, international arena. And at the time that the conclusion of those 71 days, our chief, Fool's Crow, advised us to go home and work on issues back home, and also take these issues and concerns into the international arena, which to us meant the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland. So the International Indian Treaty Council was formed in 1974 in Mobritz, North Dakota. And it was decided, and such gentlemen as the late Vernon Balcourt, Bill Means, Orne Lyons, Thomas Benyaka, Larry Redshirt, David Manyonge, Ed Bernstick, Ron Lehman, decided that we would take these issues into the international arena and establish an NGO status in Geneva, Switzerland. And the International Indian Treaty Council was right at the forefront. And they helped establish the working group on indigenous peoples' issues, peoples, not populations, but peoples. And that was a big start of a movement worldwide, creating that awareness and consciousness. And we have such gentlemen today like Willie Littlechild, Ken Deere, Tony Gonzalez, Bill Means, helping establish this awareness and consciousness. So we're very honored as indigenous people to be included in this struggle, this establishing these rights for our indigenous people through such documentation and documents as Declaration of Human Rights for Indigenous People. So this is my perspective or my awareness through my involvement with the American Indian Movement and International Indian Treaty Council. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to say that much. And I introduce myself as a Tarnahouse clan, born for Mountain Cove, and my paternal grandparents are Tobiah River Edge, and my paternal grandparents is one who walks around in the Vahni. So that's how I introduce myself, so the spirits can understand and support the prayers and the statements and any statements that we made. It would be made into a prayer. So I just want to say that much at this time, and leave no person behind, especially Leonard Peltier. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Lenny Foster. And again, for the website for Leonard Peltier, please go to whoisleonardpeltier.info. All one word, whoisleonardpeltier.info. And it's 2021. Why is he still in prison? And for to not commit, my relatives. Thank you very much, Lenny Foster.
Whoa.
We'll come back with Lenny toward the closing. I'd like now to introduce Kenneth Deere of the great Mohawk Nation to share with us his views on the significance of this date, a historic date indeed, and the challenges for the future and a message to the youth. Well, Kenneth Deere, please.
Thank you, Tony, for the introduction and also for organizing this panel. And I want to thank Jose for the flute song. And I also want to thank Lenny for those opening words and the reminders of why we're here and who we are and all the struggle that we've been into. You know, I like a little history lesson, too, a reminder of how this all started. You know, if it wasn't for, you know, really for Wounded Knee and what happened in 74 and stuff, you know, the international movement, that's where it started from. You know? It's what I call the Indigenous International Movement. That was the beginning of that. I wasn't there. I'm a latecomer. I only started in 87. You guys started before I did. So, I want to talk about today, the year, the United Nations International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, and how the struggle we had even to get that. In 1945, when it was created, you know, the indigenous people weren't really in their minds of the states, and we had to fight hard to get recognition. We couldn't even get inside the UN, whether it was New York or Geneva. I can go back to Discahe and the League of Nations. Well, that's another story. We the creation of the Working Group on Indigenous Populations, which should have been Indigenous Peoples, in 1982 was a significant achievement by Indigenous people to get a working group in the UN specifically about us and our issues. In 1992, we wanted 1992 to be the year of Indigenous Peoples, and because of the 500th anniversary of Columbus stumbling on the Caribbean and North America, so we were denied 1992 because Spain wanted to celebrate Christopher Columbus, so we couldn't get 1992. We got 1993 as a consolation prize. You know, so 1993 became the year of Indigenous people with no S, you know, like all Indigenous people were just one people, whether you're Sami or Lakota or Inuit or Aymara, Aboriginal, we're all the same. We're just one people, which was ludicrous. It was ridiculous. But that's the kind of resistance we were facing in the United Nations. And then after that, after the year, in the year of 1993, the first draft of the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, completed by the Working Group on Indigenous Population, was completed, and that was a major gain stepping stone in 1993 when the declaration was passed by the Working Group. And then we got a decade for the world's indigenous people. I think it was 1995 to 2004. And then we got another decade after that. And somewhere along the decade, they decided to have a year, a day of indigenous peoples. And it was August 9th was chosen because of the first day of the first working group on indigenous populations way back in 1982. So the year is, the day is significant. And we should always, it's a reminder of the struggle. It's a reminder of how hard it was to get indigenous peoples issues and rights on the agenda of the United Nations. And just the term indigenous peoples was an accomplishment because they were, the state so much resisted the term of indigenous peoples because indigenous peoples implies the right to self-determination. And but the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples passed in 2007 settled that argument that yes, Article 2 says indigenous peoples are peoples equal to all other peoples. And that's why the term indigenous, the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples is significant in that way. Now, I know some people are criticizing it as saying, well, you know, it doesn't mean anything. I disagree with that. I think every ounce, everything, we have to use the International Day because, you know, we all of us all say that every day is Indigenous Day. Fine. And I agree with that. But the UN Indigenous Day is also a way to remind states of who we are and that we're still here. It's a way of reminding the United Nations. And we should use that every opportunity we get to bring our issues forward. And we gotta give it meaning. You know, we just don't sit back and let the UN give it meaning or the states give it meaning. We give it meaning and we give it value. And that's how you win stuff at international levels, by asserting yourself, not by waiting and not by complaining, but by doing. And that's what we have to, and that's the International Days is one small way of bringing matters forward. And that's why we're having this panel today and all the other panels that are taking place all over the world today on this day. So all of that has a little ounce of influence and effort and sometimes inspiration for people to go forward. One of the theme of the Indigenous Day is always interesting, but this year about a new social contract, I really struggled with the theme this year because what the heck is a social contract? You know, I had a hard time with that. And so I watched the UN panel on Indigenous Day today with James Anaya. And James Anaya explained what a social contract was. And he was saying that it started in the 1700s with Rousseau and some of the other French philosophers and talking about that it's the people that should decide who their leadership is, that the kings should get their power and their with the agreement of people. They don't get it from God, but they get it from the people. And those were the first social contracts. And I found that interesting because Rousseau and those philosophers didn't get those ideas, you know, in a dream. Rousseau and those philosophers studied the Jesuit relations. And the Jesuits who were here in North America, who lived among the Iroquois, were writing about about Iroquoian society. And in Iroquoian society, it was the people that held the sovereignty, were sovereign, not the chiefs, but the people were sovereign. And we gave it's the people that gave the authority to the chiefs and the clan mothers to carry out their duties and responsibilities. And so that's where Rousseau got his ideas and wrote about it. They were consumers of the Jesuit relations. And it sort of come full circle in my mind that we're not talking about a new a social contract when the original social contract came from North America, came from indigenous people, came from here. And going and along that line of thinking, I think the new social contract is the old social contract, not the European form of social contract. Our social contract is with creation. That's our social contract. Because in our openings, like Lenny and others, we acknowledge creation. We acknowledge the plants and the animals. We acknowledge the four winds and the thunderers, and we acknowledge the moon and the sun and all of these things that are creation that we give thanks for, because without them, there would be no life. And we as indigenous peoples, we are also part of creation. We just like the plants and the animals, we have a purpose in creation. And that's the relationship. That's the relationship we have with creation. And that, so when you talk about an unused social contract, that's the contract that the world needs. Because look, because the people of the world did not violated the contract that we have with creation. And that's why we're having a disaster in climate change. That's why half the world is on fire and the other half is being flooded. You know, and that's the social contract that has been broken. And that's the social contract that has to be remade, is that we as the world's people, and we as indigenous people, must teach the world that the social contract is with creation. And we have to rebuild that social contract, so that we as a society, as human beings, as part of creation, that we can thrive again and not be threatened, and not to abuse what creation gave to us. So that's the new social contract, in my mind, that we should be expressing and that we should be sharing with the world. So I want to thank the UN for bringing up the issue of the social contract. I didn't like the idea at the beginning. Now I'm thinking about it, and it's good to think. I've come to the realization that the world's social contract is with creation, and that we have to build on that. And it's a message I want to give to the youth too, and to remind the youth that you know, that we're all part of creation, and that we all, as when we're born, we have a role in creation, just like the young animals and the young plants, that when they come up, they have a role to play in creation. And young people, you know, they're our offspring, and we have to teach them what their role is, but they also have the responsibility to carry on that role, to carry on that social contract that we have with creation, and that they have to also carry on to make sure that our relation with creation is ongoing and can sustain each other, that creation can continue to sustain we the human beings on this earth. And I and indigenous people and you, the youth, you'll be on a lifelong journey trying to find out what your role is in creation. And that's, it's in retrospect, in hindsight of my own self, that's what I've been looking for, is what is my role in creation. And I try to do my best I can be in that role. Maybe that role is what I've been doing at the international level. Maybe that was intended, maybe it wasn't. But I do the best I can to fight for the rights of indigenous peoples and to assert those rights. And everybody has to find their own role in creation to make sure that indigenous people will carry on into the future, and all human beings carry on into the future. So that's my message I have for everybody today. I want to thank you, Tony, again, for giving me this time to speak. Niao.
Oh, thank you very much, Kenneth Deere, for your words. And also, yes, and for putting some substance to that phrase, the social contract, the new social contract, filling that in as the natural, you know, basis. And then the insight that you provided on where the writers of that social contract at that time, where the origins of that story are, where that came from. So thank you very much. I'd like to now introduce, if I may, Laulani Teal and Nico Martin, please.
Aloha. Aloha. Laulani, please come forward.
Aloha. Aloha, everyone. Mahalo. Mahalo, Tony. Mahalo. Mahalo to everyone who spoke and gave blessings and prayers and music. We're here in Hawaii, and I really appreciate the mana'o that was shared so far, the thoughts that are shared so far on the indigenous peoples and on the concept of a new social contract. You know, we over here, I won't speak too long because I really want Uncle Liko to talk. He is one of the 33 kupuna who were arrested on Mauna Kea, and that has had a lot of recent developments lately. And so, you know, that's one of our many sacred places that we are working to protect, because, you know, as was established earlier, a true social contract involves consent. And that consent is the essence of any contract between any people And so I really mahalo Kenneth and others for bringing that out. So that with that idea of consent, it's really important to recognize that we as Indigenous peoples represent the consent of the land itself, essentially, because it is our long-standing relationship with that land that gives us the ability to speak for it and to stand for it when needed. So that is an extremely important thing to remember, that it's you know, we are building a global consensus within humanity, and that global consensus needs to involve the specific guidance and consent of the original peoples who do need to be recognized as such in order for humanity to continue at all. So, you know, we are here doing the very important work of revitalizing so that we can survive. And through our survival, we enable the survival of everyone. And I think that's very important. I won't speak too long because I really want Uncle Liko to have the time. But mahalo nui loa for having me here.
Mahalo. Mahalo laulani. Aloha. Aloha to you all, Tony, old friends, and new spirits, new persons that are also old friends. I'd like to offer a prayer, a very specific prayer, which is a medicine prayer, and which recognizes the Aka, the essence of all creation. And we ask for that, a piece of that essence, to make us strong, so that we can help others become strong. And together, we can overcome the obstacle in front of us, in a fashion like the passing of the rain. O ke aka ka uko e ke aku. O ka I o ka mako. E hua I ka vai vai. E hua I ka noho ana. A e pali I ka loko ino. Ua noa. Ua lele vale akula. Kauai Puna Prishin, when he returned from the United Nations as a member of the International Indian Treaty Council, was on the verge of having the United Nations do a treaty violation study, and he passed shortly after that. And the purpose of that study would be to revisit the concept of good faith. When that treaty was violated in Hawaii, it wasn't just a treaty with the kings and the queens. It was a treaty of international treaty with almost 30 or 40 nations around the world, that it was a treaty with the people of the land. So when the people of the land would come here as they do now, they would be treated with respect. We would be treated with respect. Our beaches would be preserved. They would see the life, living life. They would be able to be renewed. And it is to, in that purpose, the United Nations still has to come forth and fulfill its obligation. And the obligation of Hawaii, in particular, that was put upon the world by the Hawaiian Kingdom, or the people of the Hawaiian Kingdom, was that Hawaii in 1893 was a neutral country. Neutrality, and that neutrality was put in place by our kupunas, our elders, so that Hawaii would not be used as a theater to launch war. Now, we all know that the wars that have plagued the peoples of the continents, which have devoured and despoiled the peoples, the oceans. We are in that place. We are a theater of war. And that is one of the most primary goals that I now focused on. We can preserve, we can try to rebuild and reclaim and replant and save and leave no one behind, not even the plants, not even the animals. And so that is, I rise to that goal. And in 1982 in Black Mesa, the Nebutu Wash, at the 12th Annual Traditional Elders Conference, of which I attended, so fortunate, a delegation that had gone to Geneva and a representative of the United Nations came there and asked the elders if there was a declaration or some law that you could share with us, some concept, what would it be? And at the end of the conference, the elders came and delivered what I, when I heard it, was the most beautiful declaration of natural law. I have not heard or seen of it since then. If there are those who can access those records going back to that time, that would be a wonderful a reference point for the United Nations, for the world, for the indigenous peoples, and because all of us will be judged by natural law. So no one should stand down, but rather stand up, be united, all peoples, all the world. At that conference, the prophecy of Uncle Dan came to the floor. It was the first time that the Hopi had come into the circle, and he brought forth this prophecy from the elders. He said, yes, it would come a time when the Hopi and the Navajo would come into conflict. But we know why that happened, because they partitioned the land. They were going for the coal and they were going for the uranium. But one thing that he mentioned was the coming of the new holy people. Many of the lands that we now, you know, in the lands that are been recognized as indigenous lands, treaty lands, are neat people, okay? There are many people in the world, even some of the people who have come into the Americas who are looking for that place to plant trees, to bloom, and to be one humanity again, okay? And so on this very sacred day of the World Day for the Indigenous Peoples, I pray for that unity. I pray that and thank Arthur Manuel and his prophecy in his book, The Reconciliation Manifesto, Recovering the Land and Rebuilding the Economy, when he says things will change when the indigenous peoples of the Americas will do and go through the process that the African Americans went through with Dr. Martin Luther King, when we become that visible. And in the last radio talk with Tony, that's what came to me. Remember the prophecy of the elders. Remember the prophecy, the Hopi prophecy. We are in the time of the purification by fire because the true white brother has failed. So I pray for this, I walk for this, I breathe for this, and I share my prayers and my breath for you. I wish to hold hands with you and pray with you and sing with you and aloha from the peoples of Oceania. And we are there, but we are also grandfather to the Hopi. Our migration records show that in 2200 BC, we left the continent because we knew the colonization was coming, okay? We are one ohana. I have been to Hopi. I have sat with Milanese them, and I see the lehu, the cowrie shells. That connection is there, and we need to make it stronger and weave it together and fulfill it. That is what is before us. And to do that is to strengthen the future. And now to honor the foundation, honor the awareness, so that the generations that are under us now that we have worked so hard for can become as wise, not wiser, than we were. We give them everything because we must depend upon them now and the work that we've done to bring them to life, and so that to feed in spirit, in word, in love, so that the forest can grow again. So mahalo, aloha to you all. And Tony, aloha, my brothers. Okay? Mahalo, mahalo, mahalo. Aloha.
Aho mahalo to you as well, Liko, Martin, and Laulani, Tio. And now also the in Bolivia, just for Liko to include with what you had said, the Declaration of Natural Law that was written out in 1982 there. Yeah, that's something to look for. I think I may know where that may be. But there was also in Cochabamba in April 2010, the Declaration on the Rights of Mother Earth, which is very interesting, stimulating, and goes to with the words of Kenneth Deere earlier on the natural world and that kind of respect and view of it for the new social contract. I'd like to now, if I may, Puxu Igualiquiña from Panama. Puxu, estás en línea y hay alguien que puede traducir o si no, no hay problema, puede también en su lengua o en castellano también. Puxu Igualiquiña, por favor.
Bueno, en primer lugar, mis saludos a los hermanos indígenas la cual llegó a conocer muchos luchadores. Lo agradezco todas esas historias que hemos narrado a todas nuestras generaciones. Segundo lugar, mis abrazos a todos los indígenas de América Latina y del mundo, como el día hoy, el Día Internacional de Pueblos Indígenas, el día 9 de agosto. Para nosotros, pienso que vino a reemplazar el 12 de octubre. 12 de octubre, muchos gobiernos de América Latina celebraban como el Día de la Hispanidad y el Día de la Raza, por haber llegado primera vez los europeos a nuestra tierra para saquear y exterminar a nuestros antepasados. Pero el pueblo indígena resistió. Todavía estamos resistiendo hoy en día. Ha habido muchas épocas en las cuales que venimos luchando. Por eso reconozco mucho a los hermanos indígenas de Norteamérica, en la cual aprendí muchas cosas de ellos. Para nosotros, cuando aparecimos en las Naciones Unidas, antes que aceptara el 9 de agosto, ha habido muchas acciones, muchas intervenciones desde 1920, históricamente nos marca. Primera vez llegó a Ginebra el indígena norteamericano para reclamar su derecho y la violación de derechos humanos en la cual ellos estaban sometidos por el Estado norteamericano. De ese momento para acá, ha pasado muchas lunas, muchas soles, y nosotros todavía estamos de pie y la lucha sigue igual. Por ejemplo, en América Latina podemos mencionar hoy en día en Colombia casi diario se matan a los indígenas, dirigentes indígenas. No se cesa, no se para. Y por el otro lado están amenazando casi Centroamérica, los indígenas en su tierra. Eso es grave. Por lo menos las Naciones Unidas, cuando aceptó los reclamos, los dirigentes indígenas, sus derechos, y por lo menos reconoce en 1982 cuando crearon el grupo de trabajo. De ese momento para acá ha habido muchas actividades y muy lamentable también las organizaciones luchadores indígenas han cambiado también su sistema de trabajo. Mayoría han convertido de ONGs recaudar los fondos, quiere decir se conforma la amigada que le dan el mundo occidental, pero los hermanos indígenas que están en la montaña, que están en la selva, reciben amenazas casi diario. Si nosotros comenzamos a analizar la situación de Brasil, la situación de Colombia, es muy lamentable. Por eso pienso que nuestra situación ha habido mucha sangre en el camino, porque derechos humanos, la Comisión de Derechos Humanos ni lo toma en cuenta eso. Es muy lamentable en esa situación. Ahora que estamos viviendo, por lo menos pareciera que la situación que ha cambiado, por lo menos las Naciones Unidas también ha cambiado su sistema con nosotros, porque antes éramos rechazados en todo aspecto. Claro, desde 1977, primera vez que hubo conferencia internacional de organizaciones no gubernamentales participando organizaciones indígenas, de ese camino que hemos abierto hasta hoy en día, por lo menos nos están aceptando en sus declaraciones. Eso es lo importante. Pero sin embargo, principalmente acá en Panamá, todavía no quieren aceptar los documentos de OIT, en la cual estipula los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. No solamente Panamá, casi en toda Centroamérica no quieren aceptar, aunque ellos, los gobiernos, aceptan los documentos en la cual casi todos los compromisos que plantean las Naciones Unidas, ellos firman como de ellos. Pero sin embargo, en la práctica, nunca aceptan esa cosa, lo irrespetan. A ese nivel, hermanos indígenas, nos falta muchos años esa lucha para hacer realidad y liberar a nuestros pueblos indígenas. Bueno, yo pienso que nosotros tenemos que seguir, pero como decía, que es muy lamentable que el sistema de lucha ha cambiado muchas organizaciones indígenas. Y en el camino también desaparecieron organizaciones indígenas internacionales. O por ejemplo, te puedo decir, CMPI, Consejo Mundial de Pueblos Indígenas, desapareció. Como de Centroamérica, teníamos también otra organización, Centroamérica desapareció. CISA en Sudamérica también tenía organizado distintos áreas indígenas de Sudamérica, desapareció. Y eso es quiere decir alguien hace desaparecer esas organizaciones porque no lo quiere, porque para seguir explotando a los pueblos indígenas de América. No solamente eso, todos los días escuchamos las noticias hasta Australia, los aborígenes lo maltratan, no reconocen sus derechos. Todas esas situaciones, creo que nosotros, los pueblos indígenas, debíamos de estar firmes en esas cuestiones, porque ha habido muchos, han transcurrido mucho tiempo para que nosotros seguiremos luchar, y porque lo importante es hacer la unidad de todos los indígenas del mundo, porque así nosotros podemos reclamar todos nuestros derechos. Actualmente están amenazados en sus tierras, porque la tierra de donde viven los hermanos indígenas, son sus recursos minerales, es codiciado, como petróleo, como oro, como plata. Todas esas cuestiones, ahí los gobiernos no le perdonan a los hermanos indígenas, lo expulsan. Esas cuestiones es violar el derecho humano. Sin embargo, ellos, los gobiernos dicen no, que ellos son los que respetan, pero sinceramente en realidad no. Todas esas cuestiones, por eso yo lo agradezco a los compañeros, a los hermanos indígenas de Norteamérica, nos ha enseñado mucho nos ha enseñado en las situaciones, en las conferencias, en las conferencias internacionales que ellos han expuesto sus luchas. Eso es la cuestión que yo pienso que el 9 de agosto, hoy en día, que debíamos de celebrar, por eliminar totalmente la fiesta que celebran los gobiernos de Latinoamérica, 12 de octubre. Todos debíamos de eliminar ya totalmente. Por lo menos nosotros tener nuestra propia fiesta. Ahora actualmente comienza a la gente a ver, la persona, los hermanos comienzan a ver 9 de agosto. Pero me parece que todavía no llega a las comunidades qué significado tiene el 9 de agosto. Es lo importante que nosotros comencemos a informar a la gente qué es lo que significa para nosotros. Por eso yo pienso que nosotros la única forma es tener nuestro principio de unidad a todos los hermanos, no solamente en Cabiayala, en toda la América, sino en otros continentes también. Muchos hermanos están, lo masacran, lo violan, pero nadie dice nada. Por eso yo pienso que nosotros debíamos estar más unidos. Muchas gracias, hermanos indígenas. Gracias a todos. Abrazos a todos. Hoy 9 de agosto. ¡Viva el 9 de agosto! Así que saludos. Gracias, Tony. Gracias.
Bueno, gracias, compañero. I'm sorry to our listeners and viewers. We don't have translation, and I wouldn't attempt to translate the elaborate words and description that Buxu described to us of what the struggle is for him and his people and his view, which also includes doing away altogether with October 12th commemorations that governments are still practicing, and having Indigenous Peoples Day, as many states in the United States, for example, have adopted. And certainly August 9 needs more attention and celebratory to unite the international community. So, gracias a Puxu, y a ver si hay un modo de traducir lo que dijo aquí. Thank you, and we hope to find some translation at some point where people can appreciate what you said, Puxu. Well, no, I wanted to ask some closing words of Ken or Liko before I reintroduce Lenny as well to consider closing the program. But any closing words, Ken or Liko?
Thank you, Tony. By the way, I wanted to say it's nice to see Puxu again. I've never known him to speak less than 5 or 10 minutes, so I totally understand, Tony, that you couldn't cut in and translate as he went along.
Yeah.
It's nice to see him, though. You can tell him in Spanish that I haven't seen him for many, many years. I'm happy to see him.
Oh, I will.
I want to thank, all the words I heard from our Hawaiian brothers and sisters and the struggle that they have in Hawaii. I think in that video that you showed us before, Tony, and it showed some of the issues of the beaches and the islands that were
Sand Beach.
All those issues, and it was heartbreaking to watch them on that video. And I'm trying to think of the right words to express how we as Indigenous people have to struggle. And there's no magic bullet that's going to that's going to quote unquote save Indigenous people. You know, the UN Declaration is just one tool that we have. It's an important tool, by the way, one that we have fight for, hard for, and struggled for. But there are so many other things. And I always believe that the reason that we're still here, one of my elders once told me that our very birth is a political statement, because we're not supposed to be here, because the states tried to destroy us. They practiced genocide against us. So the mere fact that we're born is a political statement, because we're not supposed to be here. And so our whole life, our whole existence is a political statement. And that and so we have to make sure as we go forward that we have children, and we have to teach our children to struggle, because we will always have to struggle, because we're in most cases we're minorities, but numeric minorities. We're not minorities people, but we're a numeric minority. We're not ethnic minorities. You know, we're not settlers. We're Indigenous peoples, and that makes us incredibly special. And as Indigenous peoples who are colonized and who are victims of genocide, we have to struggle to continue to exist. And we have to, and those of us here on this panel, we've all been part of that struggle. And so many, all our people are part of that struggle. And we have to make sure we teach our children how to struggle, because the moment we stop struggling is when we'll disappear. You know, if we stop fighting, then we'll just disappear. We'll be assimilated, you know, or we'll be victims of another wave of genocide. So we have to always struggle in every way to save our language, save our culture, protect the land, fight for our land, and always remember who we are. And I always also say that we're a sovereign people. Sovereignty is expressed in different ways, but one of the most important things for people to do is to believe that you're sovereign. You have to believe in your mind that you're sovereign. And then if you believe you're sovereign, then you act like you're sovereign. And it's that acting out as sovereign people is what keeps us alive, and it keeps us going. Even though we're occupied and our homelands are occupied, and we have to, you know, there's so many concessions that we have to make, you know, driver's licenses and birth certificates issued by the state, stuff like that. But those are minor issues. What's most important is that here, that you believe that you're Indigenous, and that you're sovereign, and that you're not going to disappear, and that you're going to continue to struggle and fight for the land and for your identity. And that's what's important. And the world, UN, International Day for the World's Indigenous Peoples is a reminder to us that of our struggle and our ongoing struggle, and that yes, we are sovereign people, and we have to believe we're sovereign and continue to act like we're sovereign. So I'd like to end that there for now, Tony. Thanks for allowing
me. Thank you very much. And Nico, do you have any closing words, or Laulani? Health and well-being under time of COVID.
The Hopi prophecy, okay, straight line up in Hopi, straight line and the stairway to nowhere. If we plant the seeds that we now have, if we can find places to plant the seeds, plant the trees. Because when our future generations see a tree, they are given a choice rather than going on the stairway to nowhere, okay? I just found my firstborn child a few weeks ago. 57 years ago, we were separated. She did not know. She felt, she knew she was connected, but now she knows she has everything. I have a grandson that is in California. I asked her mother, tell grandpa about me. Take pictures of the jungle. For my grandson, I went to a little village, a place, a remnant of our culture. And I mean a small remnant. Our jungles, our forests are overgrown. It is difficult to replant the seed. This is not easy. It's not, you know, to say to plant, but where? So in our culture, we are beginning to revisit, and I saw it in my time, the sanctuary, the pu'u honua. Honua is our earth, the pu'u, the sanctuary, okay? To gather together, to aha hui together. The sanctuaries, to find your sanctuary places where you can have a clean source of water, to find a place where you can light your fire, your sacred fire. Many fires, burn many forests. One fire can feed many, many, many people. One source of water not only supplies the essence of life and water, but it allows us to process our differences daily and to allow them to flourish and grow. Okay. So in looking forward, I look at my grandson. Yes, I would love him to come here to Hawaii, but I do not want him to experience. So I must be careful to bring him into a place. And what I realize now, too, is now that the world is forming, I'm going to bring the seeds from Hawaii to that part of the world. Okay. So sharing the seeds, looking, finding your sanctuary places. It's like you watch a movie in Africa and it's down to one watering hole. Where are the watering holes? And we know that on the lands, the treaty lands and everything, that they were held because they had certain primal resources. Water, water, water. Okay, what to do? Where can we go? Focus there. Because then people have a place to go when we pick them up and not leave them behind. We have thousands of prisoners in Arizona. I was fortunate to go there with them. In the prisons, now our culture is being taught there. Yet when they come out of there, where do they go? So we must develop and bring back our hui, the collection, the hui, the aha, the speaking place where the people speak to the pu'uhonua, our planet, our life. So those are my sharing words. And yesterday I was up, just as a closing, I was up with my Chinese ancestors, okay? The first ancestors. And the first place we gave offerings to was a little altar made to the sovereign earth. So to the sovereign earth, my prayers, my love, and that all relations can find their way to those sacred places. Aho, Tony, such a pleasure again. I look forward to seeing to you. On September 24th, I will go check my fishing line and check that fish that is on my line. It's not a problem to get arrested. I'd rather have a fish on the line than no fish on the line.
There you go.
There you go. You know, we just let them run. They get tired. Time is on our side. So aloha, my brothers. Aloha, aloha, ahi, ahi, from the bottom of my uvai, my heart, and from the heart of Hawaii. Aloha.
Aho, Rico Martin, thank you for your words and the struggle that goes on in Hawaii and throughout Oceania, you know, solidarity with your peoples and indigenous and entire community. And my relatives, we're coming close to the end of our webinar here, but I also wanted to mention that we will attempt to record this on BayVac channel in San Francisco, California, and you can log on to that live stream Sunday, perhaps this Sunday coming, at 29.sfc.tv. So we can spread the word and share this interview with the regional speakers that were invited today to celebrate, commemorate International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. Also, don't forget Leonard Peltier, political prisoner that was spoken about by Lenny Foster, Lenny will come back to close with prayer. But go to Leonard Peltier's website, whoisleonardpeltier.info. We also wish to thank the PSL, the Party for Social Liberation, for their support in helping us transmit this messaging here, my relatives. And so is Dr. Cuellar, Jose Cuellar there, or don't seem to find him. Dr. Cuellar, Jose,
yes.
Bay Area, also known as Dr. Loco, professor, anthropologist. So I'm inviting you if you would help with a flute. And then I don't see Lenny Foster around. Is he there, Nick?
Lenny is online.
Lenny, are you there? So I'd like to ask Professor Cuellar if he would wait, and Lenny would come back and with a prayer to close, some words and a prayer, and then we'll have Dr. Cuellar with a flute, please.
Okay, I want to thank Tony Gonzalez, the director of AIM West, for putting together this event, and as I mentioned, they were just listening to all the beautiful words of expression. We're told as Dene by our grandpas, grandmas, our elders, that words are sacred. So when we make expression, say something, it turns into a prayer. We say sad. So I would like to share that with all of you, all the words of expression, the feelings and the thoughts, camaraderie that was expressed. It was good. Thank you, Tony, and I thank all the other speakers. Even though I didn't understand Buxu in his Kuna language, I could feel the heart. I could feel the expression of solidarity and love to the struggle and to the people. Likewise with all of you, the music.
Oh.
Likos and his companion, thank you. And as I say, that what has been expressed up to this point, Saad, it be made into a prayer. So I'd like to close this part of the presentation with just a short closing prayer, asking the spirits to take words that have been expressed, and that a blessing be bestowed upon all of you. May the holy people bless all of you. Baho.
Oh, my relatives, this completes our webinar, and please go to AIM West website for more information and future activities at aim-west.org.
Oh, my relatives, I want to thank you for your attention, for the significance, knowing more about International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, August 9. And you can see the entire webinar on Facebook at AIM West very soon, and certainly this Sunday on a TV show, Eagle and the Condor, in San Francisco with BAYVAC Channel 29 Public Access Channel, and also live streaming at 29.sfc.tv. That's 29.sfc.tv, Sunday Eagle and Condor, starting at 4 p.m. And that's it, my relatives. This is Tony Gonzalez, and you've been listening to Bay Native Circle. Our producer is Janine Antoine. Opening music was Al Frank Manriquez, mixed with Ross Kadi, Robert Maribel, and Rare Tribal Mob. Thank you. Go out to Falcon Molina for engineering, and to Diane Williams for the opening prayer. We also thank our musical artists, our guests, and you, our listening audience, for your continued support. And we want to give a shout out to our brothers and sisters on the inside, especially those on death row. Thank yous to Creator, to Indigenous peoples whose lands we occupy, to ancestors, and to those yet to come, blessings.
No, it's
been over 200 years since the gold was discovered here.
It was against the law at that time to be Indian.
This is a community announcement for August 28th. The San Francisco Boys Chorus is holding auditions on Saturday, August 28th in the East Bay. Auditions take place at Lake Merritt United Methodist Church, 1255 First Avenue in Oakland. Boys age 5 to 14 are eligible. Boys in K or pre-K are automatically accepted in the junior chorus. For more information or to sign up, visit sfbc.org/auditions. The community calendar is produced by the First Voice Apprenticeship Program. Please send your wheelchair accessible listing for consideration to calendar@kpfa.org. To hear this calendar again, call 510-848-6767, extension 621, or view it online at kpfa.org.
William Shakespeare wrote this poem. It's a 116th sonnet that starts, "Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediment." So this is my Black English translation. Don't let me mess up partner happiness because the troubles start and I ain't got the heart to deal. That wouldn't be real about love if I push come to shove, just punk.
No, hardly, hey. Love do not cooperate with cop-out provocations, no. Storm come, storm go away, but love stay steady if you ready or you not. Love, true love, stay steady. True love, stay hot.
June Jordan, a voice synonymous with passion, integrity, and vision. No other station has been bringing you voices like these except KPFA.
You're listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online worldwide at kpfa.com.
To see his favorite band play live. He's thought about it all week. He bought his ticket. He wore his band t-shirt. He went to the concert venue. He wasn't allowed inside the concert venue. He put away his band t-shirt. He threw away his ticket. And he thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. Beginning in September, you'll need a vaccination passport to enter certain public spaces. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Shalom Aleichem. On August 29th at 2 p.m., live music returns to Montreal as the Klez Canada Festival moves to Marché de Possible à l'Entrepôt 77, 77 Bernard East. The lineup includes Briga and her Balkan Turbo Folk, Yiddish songs with So-Called and Warhol Dervish, Romani and Sephardic music with Taraf Siriana. It's all part of a week-long hybrid festival that starts on August 23rd online with concerts and workshops where you can learn klezmer trumpet from Frank London, klezmer fiddle from Alicia Spiegels, and so much more. To register, go to klezcanada.org and join us for a CKUT Pop Montreal co-production at Marché de Possible à l'Entrepôt 77, 77 Bernard East on August 29th. Mevelen Zachsein Dot. We'll see you there soon.